The economy is getting back underway, and with it, the world of pro sports. Stay ahead of the curve with the unparalleled tools of two world-class news desks covering developments across finance, economics, technology, and sports. Subscribe to Bloomberg.com, and if you're not already a subscriber of The Athletic, for a limited time, receive a complimentary subscription to The Athletic. Go to Bloomberg.com/subscribe to sign up today. Welcome to the latest episode of The Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by Matt Fortuna. As always, we are a combinatorial optimization podcast. We can get into that with how Notre Dame is going to make social distancing work within the stadium. We got a Brian Kelly Zoom webinar today where he ran down in some detail the roster. Some interesting revelations there. And then also we got TV times, because if one more person sent me a DM when the Duke game was, I was going to throw my laptop out the window. But Matt, how are you?
Healthy, employed, well. It's September, which means summer's over in Chicago. It's raining, but otherwise doing well. How about you?
The same. It's hard to believe that the season is 11 days away. The mental flexibility it takes to get from Notre Dame is playing, but the entire Big Ten is not. It's just strange. These are strange times, and this is just another strange part of it. But we have a kickoff time. We have a kickoff network. Notre Dame-Duke will be on NBC as expected, but the kickoff is at 2:30. If you missed the rundown today, there are two night games, Florida State and Clemson. Syracuse on December 5th is still to be determined, although almost certainly a day game. And then the tricky one, the USF game, is on USA Network due to US Open Golf. So there's a lot of US stuff happening with that. But 11 days away, and Notre Dame is going to have students in the stands. Player parents, I believe, will be sort of more up in boxes. Those spaces are not getting used this season in a traditional sense. Maybe the band will be there. I think that's kind of still getting worked out. And as Brian Kelly mentioned on the Zoom call today, like, everyone has to be a master in flexibility at this point, because that's the only way they make it from one day to the next.
Yeah, I didn't know the box part about the fans. That's interesting. Or excuse me, about the parents. That's interesting, just because I'm not an epidemiologist.
Yeah, it's like
one, but it sounds like outdoors is safer.
Well, I think the theory is like the campus is closed, and you're not necessarily going to want them mixing with your campus bubble, because they're coming from California or Texas or Florida,
right.
All over the place. So if you can separate them to that level of, I guess, distancing, that I think is sort of the goal with that. But I'm not entirely sure it will happen exactly like that, but that's sort of the rumor that I've heard.
I mean, I'm glad they're letting students in. I mean, if they're going to be in-person classes, which they are starting tomorrow, and assuming, knock on wood, that goes as smooth, or at least close to smooth as they hope it will, and they don't have to send anyone home, they should be allowed in their on-campus stadium to go to a football game, especially since there will obviously be room for them to social distance and follow whatever protocols are in place. I think it's interesting when you look around the country and see the inconsistency, if you will. I mean, Clemson, I think, is going to have 30,000, something to that effect, in the stadium. But they don't have in-person classes until the end of September. So it's safe for people to come from God knows where to come in and watch a football game on your campus, but it's not safe to sit in class with your peers, that you're paying tuition for and learn. I think there's some inconsistency there, as well as Miami, which is allowing some fans in, but not students. Different situation there because their stadium is about 45 minutes from campus. It's different. I understand their hands are tied a little bit differently, but I'm glad Notre Dame is letting students in. I'm glad they're not make exceptions outside of faculty and parents.
I mean, and media.
Sure, there will be, and media, of course. I'm sure there will be a lot of people with heavy pockets complaining and trying to find their way in. I mean, remember when they were renovating the stadium And they had their spring game at the practice field outside. I think it was 2015. That was whatever Everett Golson's last spring at Notre Dame when Sean Kizer was number three. There were faculty and other friends of the program in there, and some of them were just coming up to me and asking questions about the team. And I'm just like, how are you here right now? Like, you would be on a list to get in here. Like, I thought, you're definitely not a teacher here. You're definitely not a billionaire. Maybe you're the you know, forgotten child of a billionaire, but how are you here right now? There will be situations where I'm sure they're trying to, there are people trying to get in the stadium that way, but you would hope amid a pandemic, not a construction site, but a pandemic, that there will be protocols to keep anyone from getting in who shouldn't be.
You're not expecting Tom Mendoza and Jimmy Dunn to enroll in an art history class next week?
Tom Mendoza should have a watch party at the Mendoza School of Business since his name is on that. And that will be more fun than the game.
Yeah, no question about that. So I think that the protocol, so I had a story about how that's all going to work. How, you know, Notre Dame had a data analytics professor essentially build software for them so they can assign seats and keep students distance, where if you live in a double, you can sit with your roommate. If you live in a quad, you can sit with your three roommates. Maybe you're in an off-campus apartment with five people. Those five people can sit together. On-campus students, I believe, will be in one section of the stadium, and off-campus will be dealt similarly, but maybe in a different section of the stadium. How the entrance and exit goes I'm not entirely sure. In the story, I mentioned that, okay, you're socially distanced when the game starts. What happens when Ian Book throws the game-winning touchdown against Clemson? Are people just going to stay exactly where they are? I don't know. I don't know what that's all going to look like. But I give them credit for trying to make it work. It may not go perfectly at the very beginning. As I think anyone around Notre Dame would tell you, things did not go perfectly in the very beginning with their COVID-19 testing on campus. But, you know, whereas 3 weeks ago, you're having positive cases of 102, 89, and 82 in three straight days, the last 3 days have been 10, 3, and 6. So it seems like they have a handle on how this all needs to work and the behaviors needed. And, you know, I think that there's a concern that, you know, once campus opens back up, you're going to have a lot more interaction. That's true. But I think that they saw a lot of their cases coming from off-campus activities, not on-campus activities. So I think there's hope that they can continue with this, even though I can tell you that, you know, they certainly are prepared for a spike or two down the road, just, you know, based on the nature of the virus.
Have we gotten clarity on the pep rallies yet? That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah, I have not. But this is, I haven't even thought to ask about it. It just,
come on,
it seems
season's
like
11 days away. Get your head in the game.
Yeah, it seems like something that could fade away into the background. Also, for the games, it's Mike Tirico and Tony Dungy on the call.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, I believe that just came out just a few minutes ago. So that is kind of an interesting adjustment to Notre Dame's broadcast team.
Maybe Doug Flutie's free to come on the podcast now since he's a fan favorite.
Yeah, we can have him. Maybe we could have him guest co-host with Tim Brando. That might be interesting. From Brian Kelly's Zoom today, what was the one thing he said from a roster management standpoint that stuck out to you?
That the depth chart's basically set 11 days before kickoff. Look, coaches and players know who's playing best. They know who's going to play the most. They don't need to. They don't need hours and hours of practice tape to determine that one player is better or will be better than the other. Rarely, if ever, do we hear any of them ever say anything publicly about that, because it's, well, that every competition's open. Anyone can lose their job. Blah 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 blah. Kelly, I mean, he spoke like a guy who's in his 11th year at an elite college football program. He's the depth chart set. We know who's going to be playing the most for us. I mean, we need to develop depth, but like we know what we have on this roster. And I don't know how many programs can say that, one, in a normal year, two, in a year where you had basically no spring practice and your training camp is not like any training camp you've ever had before. And I think that speaks to the health of the program. I mean, you hear that statement come out of the head coach's mouth on September 1st, And I hate to get ahead of myself, but I'm thinking, okay, if you don't go, but you know, barring any like COVID outbreaks or suspensions or anything like that, you should win every single game against anyone other than Clemson this year. Like that should be the absolute expectation. You're a good program. You've got a 3-year starter at quarterback. You have a consistent coaching staff. I know you have a new office coordinator, but it's not like he's coming from another school. He knows the personnel inside and out. You have two new assistants, but again, they're position coaches. I think the pandemic is, you know, that's a time where stability, I think, will really, really show itself in Notre Dame. With the, you know, 2.0 Brian Kelly, version 2.0 Brian Kelly, whatever you want to call it, from 2017 on, they've been at least as consistent of a program, I think, in terms of knowing what to expect week in and week out as anyone in the country. And I think they're in a healthy place right now.
Yeah, they're a known quantity. As much focus as I think gets put on losses to Georgia or Clemson.
Those are games they're supposed to lose, though. I mean,
they also
Michigan and Miami, okay, like they didn't play good.
They win every other damn time, and that's they're reliable. And I think for the better part of 20 years, including a lot of Brian Kelly's tenure, Notre Dame was highly unpredictable. You just never knew what you were going to see when the game started. And so for that to change, I thought that I'm with you. I don't want to read too much into a head coach's tone or body language in a small box on my laptop, but he should be very comfortable with this team. I mean, this team is experienced in like exactly how you'd want a team to be experienced in a year where that is all messed up like this one, where you have five starters back on the offensive line and your starting quarterback back, and you know, a couple grad transfers that are going to slot into the starting lineup most likely. So all that's a healthy place to be. I think if there was something that really struck me about what Brian Kelly, I thought it was Kyren Williams going from really number six on the running back depth chart on Labor Day night a year ago to number one. And that's something that it sounds like, you know, you've heard from behind the scenes that he has really had a strong camp, that this is not just Brian Kelly trying to get a guy confident that he's delivered.
Yeah, no, we talked about this off air before, and I reached out to someone we're both intimately familiar with ties the program, and told him our podcast today who's been shining, and he said Kyren Williams, and sure enough, Brian Kelly mentioned him multiple times today, and he barely mentioned Chris Tyree, which still gives me hope that he's going to do all right, because I think Brian Kelly always does whatever he can to temper the hype around young guys who still haven't played a game of college football yet. But I mean, if two of the breakout players, if you will, and again, we haven't seen 1 second of practice, and we're just going off the words of others who have, but if two of the guys who are standing out are running backs, that's two more than usual at that position group for Notre Dame, which was a position group that had opportunities there for the taking, and we didn't know what they had. I mean, Dexter Williams had a really, really good 2018. It took him about 3 or 4 years to get there. But that's where you see the difference in the Georgia games, like you mentioned, in the Clemson games. Those breakout guys who can change a game with one play. Notre Dame has lacked that at the skill positions for the most part. I mean, they've had some really good receivers here and there. I don't want to discount Chase Claypool or Will Fuller. But running back, they just have not really had that outside of Dexter Williams. And to hear that they might have, I mean, if we're hearing about two of them, let's assume one of them actually is true in a worst case scenario. That's good, because that was the biggest question mark, I think, on this roster coming into 2020.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly one of the least talented positions on the roster in terms of recruiting metrics, other than Chris Tyree. And I agree with you. I mean, they just haven't had, I mean, they had Dexter Williams really, essentially for nine games in 2018.
Right.
It wasn't even a full season there. And to have somebody who can essentially let you play with an extra man because he can make a linebacker miss no problem, or he can outrun a defensive back. Tony Jones was super productive, but limited physically. They haven't had a guy with sort of the extra gear or, you know, I look at Kyren Williams. I'm not sure. I feel like, you know, Chris Tyree has the higher ceiling, but to me, Kyren Williams is sort of like, maybe a little bit more raw talent in a Darius Walker kind of player, where really good first through fourth gear, but maybe doesn't have that fifth gear to run away from people, but is so good in the first through fourth gear that you can rely on him to pick up a lot of 5, 6, 7, 8 yard carries. You know, I don't know if they necessarily had a back like that last year. To me, it's a positive if Kyren Williams is moving over Sebo Flemister, moving over Jameer Smith, maybe even moving over Jafar Armstrong, which is still a little bit of a surprise to me. If that's happening, that's a good thing for Notre Dame's running game.
I think he only played 4 games last year, right? So he kept his red shirt.
Kyren?
Yes.
He played like 1. I mean, he was – I don't know if he got on the field after the Louisville
game. His bio says Louisville, New Mexico, Georgia, and Virginia. But regardless, that's 4 fewer. He has a red shirt. The NCAA just put out their eligibility mulligan, if you will, last week. And I think you had asked Brian Kelly about this on the Zoom call as far as roster management. Got basically 2 rookie running backs who might be the 2 best running backs on the roster ready to play from day 1. It's a good long-term future, I think.
Yeah, that's a good place to be for Lance Taylor, the running backs coach, at a time when, you know, it's like they missed on their top guy in recruiting this cycle. But if they can get these two guys to be good for the next 3-4 years, they're in good shape. You know, so that's a positive. I thought, you know, the other thing sort of mentioned briefly about the 2 grad transfers who were starting, and you know, I think there's this perception based on some of the grad transfers who just didn't pan out here, whether that's like, you know, Avery Sebastian at safety or Cam Smith and Freddie Canteen at wide receiver during the 2017 season. I think you go back to, you know, what Cody Riggs was during the 2014 season, and that may be the closest comparison to Ben Skowronek at receiver, who Brian Kelly said is starting at the W, you know, which is where Chase Claypool played last year. And then Nick McLeod is going to be starting as well. So I'm not saying either of these guys are going to, you know, put the fear of God into Clemson, but these are good college football players that you can trust on and rely on. And that's those will be, I think, key additions to the roster. It's interesting to me that Isaiah Pryor, not mentioned today, I don't believe, and he probably was the most hyped of them all coming in from Ohio State.
Yeah, I would agree. As we talk about roster takeaways from what Brian Kelly said today, the secondary was definitely one of them. Grad transfers, like you mentioned, Nick McLeod, Tariq Bracey. He said at corner, we're going to have one player play a lot for us who hasn't played yet. And then he said in the next breath, Sean Crawford's playing a lot of safety. We're having trouble doing the math on that one in our heads, as far as we thought you had a pretty close to an abundance of riches at safety. You have the best player on the roster in Kyle Hamilton back there as well. You have what I believe is a 6-year senior with the option for a 7th next year in Sean Crawford. That will be a great test case for Notre Dame's admissions.
PhD candidate Sean Crawford.
You know, we could assume a lot of things here given contact tracing and other things going on about why certain positions may be down a body or two. But I don't know if that's a great sign that one of your most proven corners is now moved to help out what you thought was one of your most proven position groups at safety.
Sure, the regular season is fun and all, but only one thing can compare to the excitement of playoffs, and that is DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. Both basketball and hockey have entered their respective playoffs, and DraftKings is putting you in the center of the action. With millions in prizes throughout the week, there is no better place to make it rain. Start playing for free with your deposit today. If you haven't tried it yet, daily fantasy sports are easy to play. Just draft your players, stay under the salary cap, and pile up points based off of your players' performance. There's no better way to put your sports knowledge to the test than to compete for millions of dollars in prizes throughout the week. But if daily fantasy isn't for you, DraftKings just launched Best Ball Contests for football season. If you aren't familiar with Best Ball, simply head to the app now to check it out. Download the DraftKings app and use the promo code RUN to play free with your first deposit today. Compete for millions of dollars in total prizes up for grabs this week. That's promo code RUN to get a shot at millions of dollars in prizes all week long only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit requires. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the opposite of the Kyren Williams jumping over older players. You know, this is like, this is an older player that you're taking from a position that, you know, is very young and unproven, to put him in a position where you felt like Houston Griffin, Isaiah Pryor, at least one of those guys, if not both of them, were really going to click for you. And I completely agree with what you're saying. It's like, we just don't know. Like, if either of those guys have missed 14 days due to contact tracing or 10 days due to quarantine and have to self-isolate, that changes the dynamics entirely. I mean, that, like, you just think back about training camps we have seen. If a player misses half of it, like, that's it. You cannot recover from that. And that's sort of what has hit multiple guys. You know, they have had good testing numbers last week. But the week before, when they had, I believe, 5 positives and 6 in that had got caught up in contact tracing, that's tough. You know, contact tracing in a lot of ways is worse than testing positive, because you're out 14 days instead of the 10, and then your symptoms go away, you can come back. So that, I don't know how players can miss half of training camp and then sort of feel like they're gonna have a chance to stand out to the coaching staff in a way that, you know, Brian Kelly's gonna mention them on a Zoom call. We just don't know who those players are, which is fine, but it's unfair to just sort of, I think, assume that a player who wasn't mentioned has been there the whole time, and, you know, whether through no fault of their own.
That's fair. And Kelly was asked later in the call what, you know, because we saw Auburn, I think, just miss a week of practice. We've seen LSU be down to 4 offensive linemen. Kelly was asked essentially how many practices during a game week could you afford to miss while still playing? And he said, probably no more than 2, especially if it's Monday, Tuesday, maybe Wednesday, because that's when you're hitting. And if you're missing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all right, we're practicing Thursday, we're flying to the game on Friday, that's a tricky situation. And it's one that, you know, we've already seen a number of games get moved already, 1 in the ACC and I think 6 in the American Athletic Conference, due to, you know, lack of preparation, if you will, for being ready for week 1. I mean, I think it's inevitable we're going to cross that path, if not with Notre Dame, then throughout much of college football, which is why so many of these bye weeks were built in. So to hear Kelly give as close to specifics as you can from a football coach, as far as these are the days we really need and we probably can't play without them, that'll be interesting. I mean, I don't know what in-season is going to be like as far as, like, accessing, you know, Zoom calls with Brian Kelly and how much he'll be addressing us and players and so forth. But the panic meter, I'm sure, will go off, as with everything in the last 5 months, the minute we hear about, you know, they're not practicing on time on Monday or this or that, what happened, especially if it's coming off a game week. But as you said, it's we're in the habit, especially now because our access is so bad, of overreading into everything and trying to extrapolate who was spoken about or who was not spoken about into what that might mean, when in reality it could just mean his roommate or someone on his floor tested positive and he couldn't play for 2 weeks, and so he's not up to speed. And that's going to happen. That's inevitable.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Notre Dame is sort of working through the process of, and I've gotten a bunch of questions about this. It's like, all right, well, once I get to the game on Saturday, am I going to be up there in the binoculars just sort of like checking off the entire roster to see who's out there and who's not? And I think Notre Dame would like to get to a point where they can essentially put out a unavailable list without specifying why they're unavailable, you know, maybe 2 hours before a game. So you're not having to sit around and wait for Jack Collinsworth on the pregame show to tell you that, you know, Ian Book is out today. Like, that will all be made public, you know, through Notre Dame earlier. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out during the weeks too, because I think that we've all sort of seen this in college football so far. There's been a reluctance to report much on the individuals who have missed time. But that's during the preseason. I'm on board with that. Once the season starts, like, you know, if Ian Book, we find out that he's got in contact tracing the Tuesday before the Clemson game, I doubt that people are just going to be like, well, you have to wait for Notre Dame to announce that. It's going to be, I think it's going to be much more treated like a typical injury at that point.
Well,
in terms of how it's covered.
Well, that would stink for multiple reasons because they play BC after that, and we wouldn't get Ian Book versus Phil Dracovic then too. Phil might get his revenge then. One thing, by the way, the press release NBC just put out says Doug Flutie will still serve as a studio analyst on select weeks. So I know you're all waiting with bated breath for that announcement. Also, in the lead paragraph or in the subhead for NBC, 30th season highlighted by Trevor Lawrence and Clemson at South Bend for the first time since 1979. Not sure how often I've seen an actual player highlighted in a network press release at the college level. In case you're wondering,
very highlightable.
In case you're wondering how big this game is and how long it's been since Notre Dame's played a team of that ilk in Notre Dame Stadium on NBC. Back to Brian Kelly and what we were talking about earlier. One question he was asked was, how close is this team to game ready? 11 weeks before the season, or excuse me, 11 days before the season, with, you know, pretty much an abbreviated training camp. And he said, my concern is mental. All the distractions going on, dealing with COVID, dealing with the troubles that are in our country today. I'm not worried about stunts or tackling or this or that. It's a mental performance piece. Another thing you really don't hear coaches say a whole lot this close to the season, right? It's usually, we suck, we can't do this, we can't do that. I'd rather lose a limb than give up a day of practice. And here it's like, no, we're fine. Like, we just got to stay, you know, isolated away from this disease. I take that as a good sign. I mean, you know, it's a Zoom call where he can't even see us and we're like submitting questions and it's very impersonal. So, you know, Notre Dame's putting out there what they want to put out. But I mean, we've seen a number of times where, you know, it's a Tuesday press conference or a preseason press conference. And Brian Kelly has a habit of getting ahead of himself to make a point, whether it's our offensive line was fine last year, I don't know what you're talking about, or Phil Dracovic is the best quarterback recruit in the country. There was absolutely none of that today. It was calm, steady. We're taking it day by day. We are doing the things necessary to be able to play a football season this year. And if and when we get to that point, I feel very confident about the personnel we have on this roster to go out there and have a good season.
Yeah, he's comfortable with his product. You know, that's a coach that likes what he sees. You know, he goes out to practice every day. He doesn't need to sell anybody on anything. You know, that includes selling a player on the fact that he believes in him. So that's good. It should be a confident, mature team. One thing that I laughed when he said it is that the difference between Kyle Hamilton this year and last year was night and day. Like, which one's the night and which one's the day? Like, was he day last year and now night? Because I don't know. Whatever he was last year was pretty awesome. So I'm fascinated to see what that looks like. I think that has a lot more to do with how he's used. I think that you'll see him more of a in-the-box safety, you know, sort of hawking around the line of scrimmage, maybe opposite sides from Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. But that certainly is intriguing. If Kyle Hamilton is making that big of a jump from where he already was, he's way up there in terms of college football safeties.
Well, I think part of that, too, was he's like, you know, you guys asked me this question, and, like, he hadn't played a college game yet, like, as far as where he was from this point to last year. So, obviously, having a full season of college football under his belt, he's going to be much better. And I think, you know, with most elite players, that's where you see the biggest jump from freshman to sophomore. From a guy who's just getting ahead of him, or getting a hang of things himself, to a guy who knows what he's about and what he's capable of doing. I think that the level of confidence that you get from that, I've never been a five-star prospect in anything myself, but I imagine that would be pretty, pretty important. I mean, 2 years ago, I think, I wouldn't say we were talking about Houston Griffith in that same realm by any means, but like preseason, it looked like, all right, Notre Dame's got itself a really, really promising piece of the secondary here. He's going to play a lot of football, a lot of soon, and, you know, not to single him out because, you know, these guys are really a dime a dozen as far as, you know, guys who don't live up to the recruiting or message board hype. But, you know, it hasn't clicked for him in that realm yet. So I think we all had high hopes for Kyle Hamilton last year. I think we all knew physically what he was capable of. Then he goes out and gets a pick six, I think, on his first home defensive drive of his college career.
First snap.
First snap. There you go. Against New Mexico, I believe, right? It still counts.
He had three picks in his first practice.
That's right. Against the returning starting quarterback, too.
Right. So it's, I mean, that one clicked early. That Kyle Hamilton is just a rare physical specimen. I went down to Atlanta to spend some time with him December of 2018. You know, kind of runs together. But you're just struck immediately about how big and rangy he is. He's never actually spoken to the media at Notre Dame, so we haven't spent any time around him. And obviously, we're not going to be in the same room with him at all this year. But when you're close to him, he is just built so much differently than what your average Notre Dame football player or your average college football player looks like. There are not linebackers that look as good as he does. He's got the whole package. So it's how he's used this year is kind of one of those, man, I'm just fascinated to see how those skills get turned loose in a different way. I remember talking to somebody close to him after the Louisville game last year. And if you'll remember, like, he blitzed up the middle and like whiffed in the hole on a running back. I can't remember who the back was, but I was talking to this person who was like, yeah, in high school, he never blitzed. That's the first time he's ever blitzed in a game. So for how impressive he is physically, there's like, oh yeah, there's still a lot of untapped potential. And maybe that gets into what Brian Kelly's talking about kind of a night and day difference. But that should excite you if you're a Notre Dame fan. That should excite you if you like watching really elite college football players play college football, because he's got a chance to be, you know, pretty much a surefire first-round pick in the 2022 draft.
I'm going to put you on the spot here, Pete. Is this defense the fastest group of 11 players in the history of the sport?
I believe it was only Notre Dame history, fair.
Well, I'll take it a step further.
The fastest defense ever? Like, is it faster than some of the Jimmy Johnson Miami defenses?
Yes. Faster than the 85 Bears.
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked by that question, considering last year's defense had Troy Pride on it, had Julian Okwara, had Khalid Kareem. Last year's defense was pretty fast, so I don't get that. I think that Notre Dame has good team speed, and they've had good team speed for a few years now. I don't think they got hammered by Clemson due to a lack of team speed. In 2012, when they ran into Alabama, they looked slow. I don't get the vibe about last year's team or the team before that they had speed issues. So I don't know. That was a strange question. I thought that it would have been fun to be in the room when Brian Kelly was asked that, if he would have been asked that in a live press conference, because his reaction was just like,
yeah, but sometimes he does like, he'll take the bait and just be like, yeah, it's the best ever.
Because he
just
wants to get through. That one he didn't, though.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he was just like, I don't really want to get into this. It's just like, how can I be nice and say that we're fast without it coming across as like, we've got a bunch of Usain Bolts running around? Because you don't lose a player with Troy Pride's speed or Julian Okwara's speed off the edge and get faster, I don't think. I just don't think things work that way. But that doesn't mean this defense isn't fast. I think they got plenty of guys who can move around, whether it's Owusu-Koramoah or Hamilton. I'll be curious to see what they do with the Buck linebacker. But I would just say, like, Notre Dame defense fast enough. That's good. That's a good place to be.
Fast enough. They should make that in recruiting graphics. That'll that'll sell well. I was just looking as we're talking. We saw the opening week odds. I think they're 21 point favorites.
Have they moved up? Yeah, it opened. I saw it 20.5.
I haven't seen week by week revised odds yet. I have seen the futures odds though for ACC championship. Clemson obviously the favorite at -350. Notre Dame is second at +450, and that's a distant gap between them and number three, North Carolina, at +1,000. I mean, if you're going to basically bet this future on one game, it makes sense, I think, because it probably will come down to those two teams. Now, granted, it's a weird year where, again, you don't know who's going to be available week to week, but knowing what we know about these rosters, I think that's fair.
I agree. I mean, I think that look, the Clemson game is the game we all want to see, but I think the game against North Carolina 3 weeks later is going to have, should have incredible stakes on it. You know, that, I think that was ultimately going to be a play-in game for the ACC championship game. So that's, if I had to justify why I need to go to Chapel Hill on the, and be there on the Friday after Thanksgiving.
No one's getting together for Thanksgiving this year anyway. We're all social.
I know. So I should just be down there. That's how I would do it. That's how I would.
Hopefully, they'll have a basketball game that weekend there too. You can check out.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. It's just, I came away from Brian Kelly today. You know, we're less than 2 weeks away from the first game, and thinking this is a guy who's pretty confident in what he's got, you know, and even enough that some of the freshman commentary was a little bit muted today. You know, he mentioned Jordan Johnson and Chris Tyree in passing. He's mentioned them enough where I don't think we're in a spot where he feels like he needs to hype them up a whole lot. You know, but then he threw Riley Mills and Jordan Botello in there. And at this point, for those guys, we're talking about, okay, probably Notre Dame's sixth defensive tackle and fifth or sixth defensive end. Like, if that's how that plays out, that's another good sign that your depth chart is in a really healthy spot, because those guys are incredibly talented. I went and saw Mills work out last spring or spring ago, and then Jordan Botello has sort of been advertised as this, like, this is a family podcast, so I won't use profanity, but like a really nasty dude out there, and he's just wired that way, and you're not going to be able to take that out of him, and ultimately that's going to be to Notre Dame's benefit.
Got to ask, it really, we talked to Brian Kelly today. The season's 11 days away. There are some games this weekend. It really hit home for me this past weekend when I realized at least you should have been in Dublin. And when we get every TV announcement in the world from every conference that's playing this year, that's when, to me, it's like, all right, we're ready to go. I haven't seen actual football in person or practice or anything, and I've done everything over Zoom the way I've been doing it for 5 months. But like, it finally feels like fall for me. What was this weekend like for you in place of the previously scheduled Dublin trip? Previously scheduled Annapolis trip, although I guess that would have been this weekend.
I definitely had some longing for being in Dublin and being at a fourth or fifth Guinness on Friday night. Instead, I did some very heavy landscaping around my house, which was not fun at all. I just sort of, it was a weird spot. I didn't watch the Central Arkansas game. I felt like that was just a faux start to the college football season. I needed to watch a team that I knew something about. So I think we got BYU Navy this weekend. I don't know if there's anything else.
UAB plays. Yeah, there's some games.
I spent a lot of time thinking about how I should have been in Ireland and texting people who I would have been in Ireland with. Like, wouldn't it be great if we were in Ireland together right now? He was like, yep, that's still on my calendar too. So yeah, I don't know when it's going to feel like, oh crap, the football season is here. Today was one of those days where it felt like it got closer when you see like TV times. But it may not be until like I get in the car and drive to the stadium on September 12th. On Saturday morning or whenever we're able to get in there, because it's,
but no traffic, that won't make it feel like
no traffic, easy parking. Like, I kind of want to, you know, I want to get over there and see like, okay, what is this like?
Right.
Like, and I don't even know if that will be allowed to walk around campus.
Sure.
But I'm interested to see like, okay, what kind of vibe is this going to give off? You know, could you be watching football and still be like, okay, is football starting? Like, is this really happening? Because I think it's going to be a weird dynamic. It's not going to be like anything any of us have ever seen before.
I'm with you. But the number of emails I've had to delete today about TV start times gets me in the zone about getting ready for the season. So I'm there. I wasn't there this weekend with the Central Arkansas game. I know a lot of our friends were tweeting about it. I couldn't get there yet. I can't just like pretend. I'm just not good at that. But today, hearing Brian Kelly talk, I mean, now I'm all in.
Yeah, no, it's and we're still sort of waiting to see what access is going to be. Are we going to get Brian Kelly a couple times next week? Are we going to get any
players? Will he get us? Will he be able to see us on Zoom?
You know, all that is to be determined. You know, I've been saying this for the last few months. It's like this entire operation requires a lot of grace from a lot of people, media included, because certainly nothing is ideal about the way we're doing our jobs right now. Nor is anything ideal with the way sports information departments are doing their jobs or college football programs are doing their jobs. This is just the reality that we're living with. But I believe we will we'll effort to get a special guest next week to help us preview the season. Maybe we can find somebody who's been to an actual practice to join us and talk a little bit about what's been happening. Because I think that kind of insight is it's just been tough to come by this year.
Yeah, it is. I thought it would be easier, frankly, to Zoom because most schools have had stuff every day. Notre Dame is not one of them. So you get us, you get our whispers here and there, and you get hopefully a really good guest that I don't think you have Doug Flutie in mind when you say someone who will be watching practice and can share some stuff with us next week.
I hope so. I hope so. So until we return next week. This is the latest episode of The Shamrock. As always, you can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts and on the Athletic app. And for 40% off, theathletic.com/theshamrock. Rate, review the show. We appreciate all your 5-star reviews, constructive feedback. And, you know, if you want to give us a nasty review, at least just keep it to Twitter. That'd be great, too. So until we return next week, he's Matt Fortuna. I'm Pete Sampson. You've been listening to the latest episode of The Shamrock.